just want to say, you know, as children grow up in the church and learn how to be part of the community, it can take time. And I don't know if anybody else noted some maturing that has happened in the last, you know, 6, 7 months, a year. So, nice job. Pat yourself on the back. You know, it takes a community. Clinical pastoral education is experiential learning in a clinical setting. I did 2 stints of clinical pastoral education. It's called CPE. I did this at Loma Linda University Medical Hospital back in the 1980s, the decade of big hair. And I had big hair then. It wasn't required, but I'd been pondering the possibility of becoming a chaplain, and CPE was a foundational requirement for anyone wanting employment as a chaplain. I learned a lot. The experience taught me a lot about myself and how to step into the lives of people I had never, ever met. The most crucial learning from this experience was this. I belonged in congregational ministry. That was the most important thing I learned. Sometimes we begin a project of some kind, we invest time and effort, even money. Yeah, I invested money in 2 quarters of CPE. And it opens a door to another way forward in our life. Sometimes it takes the experience of one thing to help us discern that that door needs to close so I can walk through that one. The wise men had a dream. They were going to return to King Herod per his instructions, but the dream redirects the route of their homeward journey. Did they all have the same dream? Did they wake up in the morning and one of them say to the other, "I had the strangest dream last night." "You did? Me too." And they compare notes and discover they had the same dream. Did that happen? They discern it's a clear sign. They decide to follow the direction of their combined altered states. That's right. Altered states, like dreams and visions, are still considered to be fodder for discernment. The Magi looked not only to the stars for direction. Dreams and visions were considered prime material for figuring out the present reality and future action. How do we discern present reality and future action today? How do we do that? How do we know it's time to find another way home? I don't like to quit. I don't like to quit. Finishing a project and following through on a commitment are of high value to me. It was also drilled into me in school and in my family. It can also become oppressive when we force ourselves to go the distance when it's actually doing us harm. Still, I don't like to quit. I'm usually in it for the long haul. Last year, I really struggled with a decision about a commitment I'd made, a 2-year commitment to serve as co-chair of a regional committee for our denomination. The committee was in disarray when my friend Ginger Bradfield and I began. We worked hard to get a diverse committee together and to reorganize this committee. And along the way, there was some drama that interrupted our efforts. There was some drama all along the way, but there was some additional drama that interrupted us and took our attention away from the overall mission of the committee. And we got tired, just plain tired. Neither of us wanted to give up, but we were wearing out. And I felt guilty about wanting to quit, wanting to throw in that towel. How could I shirk my responsibility? I pondered with someone outside the church who said, "Well, someone once told me, think about it not as leaving something, but ask what is it you're being invited to enter or begin? What are you walking toward?" Well, that's a good thought, I reflected. And then I read this little paper called The Epiphany Cycle, which you've gotten to do in this last 9 weeks, and looking at the spiritual journey as a creative process by walking through the Magi story. I got to this part about going home another way and realized it is possible. It is possible to walk toward the goal of home by walking away from being the co-chair of this committee. I did not have to get home base by completing the term until October of 2018. Well, there had been other warning signs, let me tell you. Not dreams, but there had been warning signs telling me, go home another way. But I pushed them aside. Like the Magi who were warned in a dream, I was warned to go home another way. But for me, it was my body shouting at me, stop! But I wasn't listening. People who teach and lead others in spiritual discernment call this a felt sense. Like when you have a pain in your neck every time you engage in a particular activity, what's that pain trying to say to you? I got confirmation there was another way home, another way to the destination by listening to the voice of another person, reading the voice, hearing from a writer. And it was only then that I also listened to my own voice, the wisdom of my lived physical experience, the chest pains that were waking me up at night, the cold sore my entire lip turned into. Discernment includes warning signs. The Magi received warning through a dream, and they did this collectively. It wasn't just one of them that had this dream. They collaborated, they conferred with each other. My own discernment included conferring and collaborating with people whose spiritual wisdom I trusted, and finally recognizing the wisdom of my own physical knowledge. And the chest pain stopped 2 weeks after I resigned. Like that. That was another confirmation. We can receive invitations to go home another way. And what is home? Really, where is home? Home is where and when God is most fully available to us. And when we are most fully available to God. I had not been available to God in that position. Home is where we're most fully available to God, and getting there isn't always easy. In fact, it can be quite difficult at times. We are not much at home with ourselves or each other in this time we inhabit, I believe. And we are often not available to God much at all. This has been true longer than any of us have been alive, really, right? So you can't blame it all on, oh, it's secularism or it's this problem. No, it's a proverbial human challenge. Political and cultural polarization, they're not new. But the antipathy of the current polarization feels new to many, many of us. It's a warning sign, like a dream, more like a nightmare. How have we been infected by it? And can we heed the warning signs to find our way back home? One option was proposed by new Orthodox theologians about 20 years ago. Let's keep our distance from the culture, maintain our integrity as followers of Jesus. And that mirrored the contraction of the mainline Protestant church, when maintaining identity was and is really still about as much as anyone could and can still do. Be who we are, be strong in our identity. That should also be a warning sign, actually, that contraction. The dysfunctions are evident across a range of institutions. It's not just us. It's not just the church. Service organizations are in decline, have been for decades. People don't have time. Some people work 2 and 3 jobs to keep up with feeding, housing, and clothing a family. And if you're a professional, working less than 50 to 60 hours a week makes you a slacker in today's world. When I was a kid, a lot of professionals had time to go to lunch with their Kiwanis group, or they had time to be in their community. So you add in commuting to the 50, 60-hour work week for a lot of people. Where's the time? Time for building community life, institutional life, where basic community begins? It's a diminishing resource. Robin Lovin wrote in the Christian Century last month, "People are losing their connections to the activities and places that gave them a sense of identity and purpose. The institutions that build social capital. The result is a society in which many people are adrift, susceptible to addictions, attracted to hate groups, or struggling in social isolation that leaves them troubled in themselves and sometimes dangerous to those around them. There are many more who continue to function satisfactorily, but who have no sense of belonging, no experience of social creativity in which they bring something new into being in collaboration with others. For them, the difficult task of making or remaking something in the social sphere just gives way to a life that's ready-made to fit their prejudices on the internet. It's all there for you. You don't have to do it and be bothered by working it out with other people. It is difficult to grasp this situation as a whole, and we are tempted to say that, well, our own church or my school or where I work or my family is an exception to the general decay. But the scope of the deterioration over the last 3 or 4 decades is hard to deny. We've experienced a devastating loss of social capital in the very places that used to be best at creating it. Can we remember our way home? Can we make a way, find our place on the way we call Christian discipleship? My own extended family has experienced a rift recently as a result of the political polarization in our, it's not just our nation either, is it? A sense of home should be safe enough to talk about difficult matters. And I wonder how this relationship that is now broken will find another way home. And the church, a sanctuary, needs to be safe enough to talk about difficult matters, important current challenges we face, whether they're our own individual choices or collective decisions that we face. In light of our faith, we need to address these, especially when we disagree. The community of church is called to be an alternative community so people can find their way home to God. It is not a place to escape the troubles of the world or run away from the dangers facing us. We are not part of the distraction industry. It is a place to discern together the warning signs, find a way to discuss and discern the way that is toward our true home in God. And for this alternative community, Jesus is the one who shows us that way. We're called to inhabit places that are morally empty, and there are morally empty places inside and outside the church. Robin Lovin writes again that the church, as an alternative community, cultivates a set of virtues. We don't talk about virtues much these days. Cultivates a set of virtues that stand in contrast to the surrounding society. As an alternative community, it is a holding space for action. It is preparing people with a genuine sense of vocation to to begin rebuilding social capital and moral imagination in the institutions in which they live and work. So it's not just here, it's not just for the church, it's for wherever you live and wherever you work, wherever your community is. Nancy, could you move the next slide for me? It will require people who understand their religious identity and have a realistic assessment of the world around them. They will need a special kind of commitment to each other that supports them when they venture to raise questions, difficult questions, about goods and goals, like the common good, that most people no longer understand, frankly. We also need a special commitment to our own ongoing conversion and self-transformation. The gospel represents a harder truth. It calls us to be changed in a way that changes what we want. The work involves forming the church as a community of trust. That's slow work. That's patient, relational work that this congregation has invested in and keeps coming back to and investing in which people can explore questions about their lives that they cannot yet ask in the concrete places where those questions come up, like work and its purposes. How many people stand around and work and talk about, well, the nature of our work here is and the purpose and my location, it doesn't happen much. Or concerns about families or schools or the neighborhoods, the communities where we live. You can go to the next slide now. Thank you, Nancy. Making a special commitment to each other, forming church as a community of trust, it requires something of us, doesn't it? Our world needs us to be finding another way home. As we do this important work and become more fully available to God, we grow and we deepen in divine wisdom. This provides us the moral imagination that is needed for this present hour. That imagination is available to us in the life and the teachings of our brother Jesus, who invites us to choose life. Choose life.